We're going to look mainly in the book of Exodus today at the interaction of Moses with mainly one angel, the angel of the Lord. But we'll try to examine exactly what that means, and it's a very remarkable interaction that he had that we'll look at. It's a set of verses that we often read through somewhat hurriedly and say, I wonder what that means. But the implications are very, very interesting. The handout that you've gotten this morning is a discussion of the material in the third chapter of Exodus where Moses first meets the angel of the Lord. They give you a little background on this. Moses had been in Egypt for 40 years where he was raised. And I think that was pretty much an interesting education that he received there in government, science, and the religion of the Egyptians. He was raised, of course, in the palace as a son, an adopted son, of Pharaoh's daughter, who was probably Queen Hatshepsut, that you'll find stories about on the Learning Channel and the History Channel and those educational channels on TV. She was a very strong, powerful queen who took over from her son, Thutmose III, as a co-regent, and she just never let him reign until he was in his 20s. And finally, it seems, she just sort of disappears from the scene. She may have been removed forcibly from office by her son. And he was one of the most powerful pharaohs of Egypt's history. After he was exiled from Egypt because he killed an Egyptian, you know that story. He felt like he was doing his own people who were being forced into labor by Pharaoh, doing them a service by killing one of the overseers. And it was found out, and he was chased away, and so he went to Midian and lived for 40 years in the family of Reuel and Jethro, who were priests of God Most High. That's an interesting thing, because there he got his education, apparently, about God. He may have been told many good things about Jehovah from his parents and from those of his own people. But I suspect that 40 years in the wilderness tending sheep and learning a lot from Reuel, who eventually passed the priesthood on to his son Jethro, who was the priest of Midian. We don't know much about that, but that's a Gentile, not someone from Abraham's descent. And so he was evidently a priest much like Melchizedek, whom Abraham had seen, who was both priest and king of Jerusalem. So now he knows about God, and perhaps he has been educated extensively about the history of humanity from the Garden of Eden on down through the time of Noah and on down through the formation of the various nations of the earth and the history of the world down to that particular time. We don't know if Reuel or Jethro taught him those things, but he evidently had it from God ultimately when he wrote it all down. But he may have known a lot about it from his education in the wilderness. And then he's 80 years old, and he goes out one day with the flock to a mountain area where they can feed. The sheep could eat from the desert floor during the rainy season, but when the rain stopped, they had to get up onto the mountainsides to find green grass, and so that's where he had taken him, to Horeb. And then that's the story that I handed you in the handout. excuse me, the same pollen that is bothering the preacher is bothering me too, so don't worry about it. And that's a story we've talked about before, the burning bush and what it represents symbolically, and you can read that on later on. We're not going to talk about that specifically this morning, but we will talk about that episode because it's Moses' first interaction with the Lord's angel. So in Exodus 3, it starts out this way, and this is as far as we're going to go in this discussion. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his brother-in-law. It says in your version his father-in-law, but that's the same word. And this is 40 years after he married Reuel's daughter, and Reuel was already an older man, so it's probably Reuel's son Jethro. And I don't know why they don't translate it that way in most of the versions. But he was the priest of Midian. He had inherited that from his father. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert, that is, Moses did, came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord, notice it says specifically who it is, and we've already had a lesson about the angel of the Lord, and it's my contention that when the angel of the Lord shows up in the Old Testament, it's really the Messiah before he becomes the Messiah. We're talking about Jesus before he was named Jesus. His name is Wonderful. He said, and we've already talked about that one in the interaction with Manoah, you recall, the father of Samson. And so this is whom I think this is. The Messiah, before he became the Messiah, was intensely interested in the history of Israel because that was leading up to his birth, ultimately, in New Testament times. So the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. And that's an unusual appearance of an angel. No matter how you look at that, that is quite remarkable. You might remember that the angel of the Lord ascended back to heaven in the presence of Manoah and his wife in the flames of a sacrifice. The fire doesn't seem to bother angels much. And in fact, in Revelation, there's an angel standing in the sun. That's pretty hot in the sun. It doesn't bother them, apparently. So anyway, they probably don't interact with the energies in our world. And Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. And God was counting on the fact that he would go investigate. Obviously, if you got a flock of sheep out in the pasture and there's a fire, you got to be careful that you don't have a fire overtake your herd. And so you're going to go see what it is. When the Lord saw. Now here we have the word L-O-R-D, all in capital letters. Remember how that's done in the Old Testament, in the NIV anyway, and a number of other versions do it the same way. That word Lord is the name of God, Yahweh, what's called a tetragrammaton, four-letter word that the Jews use as God's personal name, Yahweh, Y-H-W-H. If you transliterate that into our letters. And so the Jews, however, do not speak that name. They will not say it out loud, nor will they write it. And so they generally abbreviated the name and put the first and last letters or something into it. But when in modern translations, that's been put into this strange form of all caps, big L, smaller capital letters, O-R-D. But whenever you see that, that is the name of God. So when Yahweh saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. So who's speaking here? Well, the word Lord can mean either the angel of the Lord or God himself. But when it says God called to him, then we're pretty sure it's the Father in heaven, aren't we? Moses, Moses, and Moses said, here I am. And you know he went over and had his conversation with God, and God eventually compelled him to go back to Egypt and rescue the Israelites from Egyptian bondage. And that takes multiple chapters. We're not going to go through that. You've seen you can read that for yourself. But here we have this ambiguity in the thought of, is the angel of the Lord, I'm going to call him Jesus because he doesn't have that name until he gets to New Testament times, understand. But is it Jesus or is it God? Or is it perhaps the Holy Spirit? That's a possibility, of course, but I think we're really looking at the two when we're trying to decide who's speaking. So we can go to the New Testament for some guidance on this matter. And that's in Acts 7 and some verses that Todd has been teaching on, taught to us several weeks ago on Wednesday night, in the defense that Stephen raised. Notice what he says about this particular event in Moses' life. This is the same Moses who they had rejected with the words, "Who made you ruler and judge?" That's when he was chased out of Egypt. He was sent to be their ruler and deliverer by God himself. That sounds strong enough to be the Father, isn't it? Through the angel who appeared to him in the bush. So there, Stephen is saying, the angel is the messenger and God speaks through him to Moses. And so when you see that conversation back in Exodus, you can't really tell whether it's God or Jesus talking. And I probably should have put these verses in. If you go to John, the Gospel of John in chapter 14, you see Jesus explaining to Philip. You remember those verses. Philip said, "Show us the Father and we'll be satisfied." But Jesus said, "Well, have you been with us all this time and you don't know the Father?" You remember him talking about that? And in those verses in chapter 14, I think it's about verses 9 through 13, he says that the very words that Jesus teaches are the words that God's told him to teach. After all, if he's an angel, he is a what? A messenger. And so he's carrying a message from God, and even though he will eventually become the Messiah, and even after he becomes the Messiah, he only teaches those things that God has told him to teach. So he's like a prophet in the sense, and of course Moses becomes a prophet, and so in the sense that he tells the people what God the Father told him to say. Well, so if we go on with what Stephen says here, he led them out of Egypt, did wonders and miraculous signs in Egypt, that's Moses, at the Red Sea, and for 40 years in the desert, this is that Moses who told the Israelites, God will send you a prophet like me from your own people. And that was the prophecy ultimately that was quoted by Peter about the ultimate prophet, which was Jesus himself, who would be like Moses. From your own people, he, that is Moses, was in the assembly in the desert with our fathers and with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai. Now there is a surprise, because when we read about the conversations between Moses and God on Mount Sinai, we think of it in terms of the Father. But he was with the angel who spoke to him from Mount Sinai. So the angel is doing the speaking, but in many cases, he's speaking God's words. And in part of the conversation on Mount Sinai, it's obviously God speaking from heaven. He says so. So we're going to look at those verses this morning. It's quite remarkable that God speaks directly to man and that he also speaks to Moses through the angel of the Lord. The angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai, and he received living words to pass on to us. What do you suppose those living words are? Basically, what did God deliver to Moses on Mount Sinai? The law of Moses, okay, but the Ten Commandments and that sort of thing. So those are clearly living words passed on to us, that is to the Jews that Stephen was speaking to. Okay, so back to Exodus. In Exodus 13, we're talking about encounters of Moses and angels. Okay. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. Now, this is right after they left Egypt in the Exodus. By day, the Lord went ahead of them. Now, notice it's the Lord, Yahweh, went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. So here's this big pillar of cloud and fire that leads them. And it stands at the head of the troop of the 2 million people that are being led out of Egypt. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. So they were being led by the Lord in this cloud. But now notice back on in chapter 14, verses 19 and 20, then the angel of God who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, see, it's the angel of God, and here it isn't the angel of the Lord particularly, it's the angel of God specifically, clearly not God the Father, but his angel. He withdrew and went behind them. This is at the time that the Egyptian army caught up to them. And so the pillar moves behind the Hebrews who are camped on the edge of the Red Sea. And the pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them. See, when the angel moved, the pillar of cloud moved and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side. So neither went near the other all night long. That is the Egyptians and the Israelites. And of course, before the Egyptians could get through to try to capture them, what happened? Moses spread out his, held out his rod over the waters, and what transpired? The waters parted, and they went through on dry land. And when the Egyptians tried to go through and follow them, they were drowned in the sea. All right, so there we have kind of, by piecing together these two scriptures, you see that the Lord in this pillar of cloud is also the angel of God, and they're sort of used interchangeably here. So God's angel appears to Moses, but there will be occasions where God himself appears. So let's see what that story is. Now the Lord said to Moses, now this is in Exodus 19. This is before he comes down on Mount Sinai, the Lord does. I'm going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you, Moses. Then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. And what they had said is in a previous verse, we will do everything the Lord has said. I put that in brackets there. That's what he reported to God. And the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. I don't know if you've seen the Exodus, that was Charlton Heston's movie back in the 60s or something. I guess everybody's experienced that. Know that the Israelites are modern day Jews, are preparing a movie about the history of Israel that is where this is the focal point. They want to reinforce to the world about the Exodus. And they are taking the movie, they're going to try to depict an accurate movie. They've been working on it for 7 years to be accurate to the Old Testament story. And I'm curious to see how they're going to show this. But a huge fire comes down on the top of Mount Sinai. And this is in Arabia, incidentally. This isn't Sinai in the Sinai Peninsula. If you're confused about that, you might go look at this video that our Thursday morning class looked at a couple of weeks ago. It's on the internet, and you can watch it anytime you want to if you just Google the search for the real Mount Sinai. And that very video that we looked at is on the internet, free for you to see. So they're preparing a depiction of this, but it's a scene that it is very difficult to imagine. And it's described here, and so we'll look at that. On the morning of the third day, he said, now get ready, on the third day I'm coming down. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Now, there are sound effects here, okay? This trumpet is sounding and it's going to get louder and louder. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. All 2 million of them, okay? Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace. And of course, people who don't believe in miracles and that sort of thing say, well, that this was just a volcano and that was a volcanic eruption. But if you go up on this mountain and look at it now, there's no volcano there. And the rocks in the top of that mountain are not volcanic rocks, they're granite. But they are covered with a thick layer of blackened, melted rock. It's amazing. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace. The whole mountain trembled violently, and the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Okay. Would that frighten you? Would it get your attention? Then Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. See? I think God spoke from heaven in part of this scene. And God spoke, the next chapter, chapter 20, begins with the giving of the Ten Commandments. And God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And he goes on about don't make any images, don't put any gods beside me, don't, and all of the things they shouldn't do and the things they should do in the Ten Commandments. And so is it God speaking from heaven? I think so. And I think they heard the voice of God. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites this. This is in chapter 20. You have seen for yourselves that I have spoken to you from heaven. That removes all doubt, doesn't it? Do not make any gods to be alongside me. Do not make for yourselves gods of silver or gods of gold. He repeats something he had told them in the Ten Commandments, and for good reason, I suppose. He knew what their tendency was going to be. And what did they subsequently do? They built a golden calf. Yeah. Was God pleased about that? No, he had told them several times not to do that, and they did it anyway. Why would they do that? Just because people are stubborn? They do things you don't want them to do? Yeah?
You know, today you hear people say, well, if I could just hear what they heard, or if I could just see a miracle or whatever, I'd believe it.
Yeah.
What happened here?
Yeah, what happened here? They didn't listen to what he said, did they? And so, of course, a number of them died because of that. Yes. No, it was these very people, and it was just a few days later. Because it's during the period when Moses was called up to God on the mountain to give him the Ten Commandments written in stone. And he was gone 40 days. I can't imagine people doing that. And when Moses got back, he was incredulous about it all. And he said, he told Aaron, what did they threaten you with that you would do this? You see? And so the ones who were involved in this business of the golden calf were killed in the ensuing discussion and activity there. And it was the Levites who led in the slaughter of the sinners in that situation. So, okay, that's another story, and it'd take a long time to go through all of that. We're looking at Moses' interaction with the angel. So, God is speaking now in Exodus 23. And we know it's God because he's going to talk about the angel. Okay, so it's not the angel doing this, it's God who's speaking. See, I am sending an angel ahead of you to guard you along the way. He's reassuring Moses about leading them to the land of Canaan. I'm to guard you along the way and to bring you to this place I've prepared. Pay attention to him and listen to what he says. Do not rebel against him. He will not forgive your rebellion. And there's a verse we talked about when we were discussing the business about, is it Jesus? Because an ordinary angel can't forgive sins. But if it were the Messiah, he could. And that's why I think this is Jesus, the angel of the Lord. Pay attention to him. Do not rebel against him. He will not forgive your rebellion, since my name is in him. And so he's called the angel of Yahweh, and Yahweh's name is in the angel of Yahweh, the angel of the Lord. If you listen carefully to what he says and do all that I say. So there tells you what the angel of the Lord is going to tell Moses is what the angel of the Lord has been told to tell Moses by God the Father. So it's God speaking on this occasion, talking about the angel of the Lord. So if you listen carefully to what he says and do all that I say, I will be an enemy to your enemies. I will oppose those who oppose you. My angel will go ahead of you and bring you to the land. And it goes on discussing the trip that they're about to make. And of course, that was interrupted because they did not listen about the spies brought back an evil report, you recall. And so there's another 40-year interval here ahead of them. They don't know it at this time. In Exodus 24, then he said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the Israel of the elders of Israel. This harkens back to chapter 18, I think it is, where Jethro visits Moses and the people, and he's criticizing Moses for being the judge all this period of time and taking all of the load of judgment upon himself, and says you need to set up a judicial system. And it was the point at which is described what eventually became the Sanhedrin. 70 of the elders of Israel who would act as judges in matters where there was disagreement and unhappiness on somebody's part. And Moses only had to hear the most difficult cases. And there was an arrangement set up where the simpler cases could be settled by these men, the 70 of the elders of Israel. And they are all invited up. You are to worship at a distance. Come up to the Lord. He's saying, come up on the mountain. But Moses alone is to approach the Lord. The others must not come near, and the people may not come along with him. So it's just the 70, and Nadab and Abihu and Aaron, because they're going to be the priests, you see. Not yet appointed, but they will be by the time they leave Mount Sinai. So Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel went up and saw the God of Israel. Verses 9 to 11. Under his feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. But God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God, and they ate and drank. But we'll see in a minute, they didn't see him clearly. Because no one may see his face, he says, and live. So they were at a distance, perhaps, and there's a description by Daniel in a vision where he saw God on the throne. And he gets as far as the fact that his hair was as white as snow, and that's all you ever learn about his figure, about what he actually looks like. But this is interesting. Something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. They saw him in some form on top of the mountain. There's not a level area of sapphire on top of Mount Sinai. So they were looking at God as he came down, perhaps in something like the chariot that the cherubim had brought in Ezekiel's presence, you recall. And there's some similar kind of description there. But they saw God. And they ate and drank. And that was the celebration of the completion of the agreement they had made with God. That's, they eat a meal after having a covenant confirmed in this fashion. Yes. And yet they lived. Well, I think they didn't see him clearly face to face for reasons that we're going to talk about next. Okay? So here next is 33. Now this is after the deal with the golden calf. These are the survivors of that event. Now Moses used to take a tent and pitch it outside the camp some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. Anyone inquiring of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. And certainly Moses asked for direction many times, and it's implied that Aaron and others could as well, and maybe even some of those who were acting as judges over the people could go there for advice. And later on, there is a mechanism for people to inquire of the Lord through the high priest. You know about the Urim and the Thummim. It's hard to say, but and even more difficult to understand. But nonetheless, there was a mechanism for asking God yes and no questions, at least. And whenever Moses went out to the tent, all the people rose and stood at the entrance of their tents, watching Moses until he entered the tent. As Moses went into the tent, the pillar of cloud would come down and stay at the entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. What does that imply? He's meeting with whom? Who's in the pillar of cloud? He's meeting with the angel of the Lord, isn't he? But God's going to speak to him through the angel of the Lord. So the pillar of cloud would come down, stay at the entrance while the Lord spoke with Moses. Whenever the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the entrance of the tent, they all stood and worshiped, each at the entrance to his tent. The Lord would speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks with his friend. I don't think this is God the Father, but this is God the angel of the Lord. Then Moses would return to the camp, but his young aide Joshua, son of Nun, did not leave the tent. Of course, it's implied that the angel of the Lord left the tent. The cloud went back to where it had been. Moses said to the Lord, and this is just continuing on in Exodus 33, apparently in one of these meetings, "You've been telling me, lead these people, but you've not let me know whom you will send with me. You said, I know you by name, and you have found favor. If I have found favor in your eyes, teach me your ways so I may know you and continue to find favor with you." That's a prayer we could pray, isn't it? "Remember that this nation is your people." He keeps reminding him of that. There was a time not long previous to this when God was saying, they're not my people anymore if they're going to do things like this. So this is an occasion God took them back, of course. And the Lord replied, "My presence will go with you and I will give you rest." What do you suppose my presence is? Who's going to go with them? It's the angel of the Lord. And I think my presence is just another name for this angel. But he's a special angel, isn't he? My presence. And when Jesus was on earth as the Messiah, who bore the presence of God to the people of Israel? It was Jesus. It was the Messiah. And I think this is another indication of what he's talking about and who the angel of the Lord is, that we'll see something even stronger in a minute. Then Moses said to him, "If your presence does not go with us, don't send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? And we can ask that question now. How will people know that we're Christians? Unless Christ goes with us? That's how important it is that we watch very carefully what we say and do. All right. And the Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you've asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. What does that mean? Sure, he knows him by name. God surely knows who Moses is and calls him Moses. But that must have some special meaning. What do you suppose it is? I know you by name. I suspect one of the meanings, and it may not be the only meaning, is that Moses is clearly, his name is written in the book of life. To have that kind of connection with God is a very important thing. Then Moses said, now show me your glory. I always thought that was a very, very bold statement on Moses' part. But it's not unlike the implications of what Abraham did when he talked with the Lord about the fate of Sodom and Gomorrah. If I may be so bold, if there are 50 righteous souls in the city, will you sweep it away? 40, 30, 15, 10. And so in discussing things like that with God, that requires an intimacy that very few men have ever had, but certainly Jesus had. And the Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. And I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. Is the goodness of God his glory? Is that what he's saying? Is your goodness your glory? Grace, yes.
Which is merited or unmerited?
Favor with God. So, your glory, I think by implication, is your goodness. And we'll see that emphasized in a minute. I will cause my goodness to pass in front of you. And I'm wondering what Moses saw. I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. And if that's an absolute, then we know that either the 70 who went with Moses onto the mountain didn't see his face, or that wasn't God, but I think it was God. It was somehow obscured to them. Then the Lord said, and this is remarkable, isn't it? There is a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I pass by. Know of any songs that we sing that suggest such a thing? In the cleft of the rock, God protecting, covering us with his hand. Until I pass by, then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen. He's talking to God now, isn't he? This isn't the angel of the Lord, because he sees the angel of the Lord face to face in the tent of meeting. This is God, the Father. The Lord said to Moses, chisel out 2 stone tablets like the first ones, and I will write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. Why did he break them? Because the Israelites had broken the covenant. Even before he got down off of the mountain with the Ten Commandments, they had broken the law, and so he just smashed the tablets, symbolic of that. Be ready in the morning, and then come up on Mount Sinai. Present yourself to me there on the top of the mountain. No one is to come with you or to be seen anywhere on the mountain Not even the flocks and herds may graze at the foot of the mountain. And I gather by this that even Joshua didn't go with him on this occasion. So Moses chiseled out two stone tablets like the first ones and went up on Mount Sinai early in the morning as the Lord had commanded him, and he carried the two stone tablets in his hands. And evidently God wrote the Ten Commandments on those tablets. They were written by the hand of God. That's mentioned a number of times in the Bible. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord, Yahweh. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, Yahweh, Yahweh, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving their wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. Now there's a distinction there, isn't there? You can be forgiven but still be punished. Do you ever make that distinction with your children? You have to, don't you? Forgiving the wickedness, rebellion, and sin, yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Some have asked, well, doesn't that conflict with the statement made in Ezekiel that the father will bear his own sin and the son will bear his own sin? That's in terms of guilt. But punishment, even though, for example, David was forgiven for the sin of murdering Uriah, he suffered considerably with his family over the rest of his life and lost many of his sons to sin because of their sins. But he was punished heavily for what he did, although he was forgiven for that sin. Moses bowed down to the ground at once in worship. O Lord, if I found favor in your eyes, he said, then let the Lord go with us. Although this is a stiff-necked people, forgive our wickedness and our sin and take us as your inheritance. Okay, we're nearly finished here. Then Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. He was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, so Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. They were running away, and he called them back, you see. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. That's in the tent, of course. And when he came out and told the Israelites what he had been commanded, they saw that his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went in to speak with the Lord. So you see, the result of speaking with the angel of the Lord face to face was that his face became radiant. He glowed. Isn't that interesting? Would you want to glow? Well, Paul has something interesting to say about that. No, Matthew says something about that. But Paul does too in a minute. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun. That's Jesus, okay, clearly here. And his clothes became white as the light. And then you know the rest of that story about the transfiguration. It's recorded in three of the Gospels. So there's a glow on the angel of the Lord, and it's transferred to Moses. Moses, a servant of the Lord, died there in Moab, as the Lord had said. Now at the end of his life, he buried him in Moab in the valley opposite Beth Peor. But to this day, no one knows where the grave is. Moses was 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak, nor his strength gone. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all these miraculous signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and all his officials and to his whole land. For no one has ever known the mighty power performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. And finally, in 2 Corinthians, the third chapter, this commentary on that event. Therefore, since we have such a hope, he's just been talking about the hope that Christians have, we are very bold. Moses was very bold, so was Abraham, wasn't he? As we've already mentioned. We are not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face to keep the Israelites from gazing at it while the radiance was fading away. Apparently with time, this would disappear. But their minds were made dull, for to this day the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It's not been removed because only in Christ is it taken away. Even to this day when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. Whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil's taken away. That means that the meaning of the law of Moses and the prophets and the predictions about the Messiah becomes plain when someone suddenly realizes what it all means. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's freedom. And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. You reflect the glory of Christ. Christ reflects the glory of God. But you must, what is the glory of Christ? And how do you reflect the glory of Christ in your life? Is the goodness in your life? Is the glory of God in your life? Being what you need to be as a Christian and the kindness that you reflect to the rest of the world is an ever-increasing glory, not one that fades away, you see, which comes from where? From the Lord, who's the Spirit. All right, thank you very much. We'll see you next week. We'll talk about prophets and the angels.